Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Radio ENT Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan. Well, today we're rocketing off to the stars with an episode of X-1, and the stars are the Sticks. Following that, we'll have a musical interlude with Groucho Marx and Gloria de Havilland. They're going to sing the trolley song, if you can believe it. And after that, we'll take to the college town of Ivy, USA for a brief visit with Ronald Coleman and his real-life wife, Benita Coleman, on the halls of Ivy. Let's get started.
In just a moment, X-1, but first...
A familiar theme that introduces some of the sweetest music this side of heaven, the music of Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadian. And beginning Monday, July 30th, NBC Bandstand brings you live 2 full hours of your favorite tunes by Guy Lombardo, Tommy Dorsey, plus wonderful arrangements by Freddie Martin and Wayne King. It's 4 top bands in person, joined by sparkling personalities like Burt Parks and Johnny Mercer, your Mr. Music. Remember, July 30th for the premiere of NBC Bandstand.
And now stay tuned for X-1 on NBC.
Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2. X-1, fire.
From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on 1,000 maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, The Stars Are the Sticks by Theodore Sturgeon.
They call me Karen. It isn't my real name, but it suits my job. Karen, you may remember, ferried dead souls across the River Styx of Greek mythology. I ferried dead souls from the planet Earth out into the unknown of space. My little satellite station is known as Curbstone. I've been here for 20 years. Yes?
Karen?
Oh, tween. What is it?
There's a ship landing from Earth.
Is it the regular shuttle?
Yes.
Okay, we'll check the candidates as soon as they're in.
I'll fill out the reports for you.
Thank you. Oh, tween.
Yes?
Close the door a minute, will you? I want to talk to you.
Yes?
How long have you been here on Curbstone?
Oh, I don't know. I think 2 years.
Approximately. And you've been helping me here in the office for almost 1.5 years. Have you thought about going back to Earth?
Well, yes, I've thought about it.
And?
Well, I couldn't. I'd rather die. I just don't seem to belong there.
You'd rather stay here and wait?
Yes.
Even though you may never become certified for space?
One day it will happen.
Perhaps. I almost hope it won't.
Oh, don't say that.
Well, the shuttle should be coming in soon. Maybe this trip there'll be somebody aboard for you.
I have a feeling there will be.
I suppose I ought to explain a little about Curbstone at this point. We're a stopping point. Well, a jumping off place would be more accurate. We get people from Earth who, for many reasons, cannot remain there. Some are antisocial, criminals of a sort. Some are misfits, individualists who cannot adjust to the rigid standardization. Some are just different. People who are physically different and who have been ostracized as a result. And a few are poets. Those who have souls too big for the confines of Earth. They come to Curbstone and wait to be certified for space. And it's my job to send them out.
They're waiting.
How many of this trip?
Two men and a woman. One of the men...
Yes?
Nothing.
Oh, I've known you too well to be fooled. Why, you're practically glowing. Did you speak to him?
No.
But you think perhaps he'll be the one to choose you?
Well, I think perhaps... the way he looked at me...
How?
Well, he didn't think there was anything funny about me. He just looked.
There is nothing funny about you.
Oh, you're trying to be kind.
You should know me better. I'm the original Billy Goat Gruff.
Oh, I do know you better. You have a kind heart.
Enough of that. Ask him to come in. One at a time. I watched her walk to the door, and I thought she was beautiful. She was, but not in a way acceptable to the eugenics department back on Earth. Tween was an albino. She had silver skin and hair and ruby-colored eyes. If I hadn't been such an old fat fool.
This way, please.
Thank you.
This is the senior release officer. He'll check you in.
Thank you, miss.
Your name, please.
Well, don't you know it?
No, I'm afraid I... Judd! Good Lord.
Hello, friend.
Judson, after all these years.
I understand they call you Karen.
Yes.
Good, I'll call you Karen.
Well, what in the name of misery brings you to Curbstone?
Oh, I'm a candidate.
But you, of all people, you had a good position and enough money. You didn't get into trouble, did you?
Oh, the sort.
Of what sort?
When I was your student at the university many years ago, you taught me to enjoy my individuality.
Huh.
I tried to teach my students the same thing. The authorities wouldn't stand for it.
I see.
So I decided to take my chances in space.
Are you aware of the risk?
Well, not fully, or I probably wouldn't be here.
Well, then let me acquaint you with the procedure here on Curbstone. Look out that window. What do you see?
It looks like a spaceship on a launching platform.
Exactly. That ship is aimed at the outer galaxies. It has enough fuel to reach its destination and land, but not enough to come back.
I see.
The people who come here to Curbstone have to be certified before they can take off in one of those ships.
Well, how does one go about being certified?
There are three requirements. You must pass a physical examination and a mental examination.
And the third?
You must find an agreeable partner for the trip.
A partner?
A partner of the opposite sex who is willing to share her life or death with you from now until eternity.
Well, that could be rather difficult.
When the Earth authorities agreed to Operation Curbstone, it was decided that it would be a method of colonizing the outer galaxies with Earth people. Therefore, these ships are built to carry two people.
I see. Well, suppose I choose somebody and she doesn't want me.
You wait.
Suppose, now just suppose I pass the physical and the mental test and I even find a partner. Suppose we get into the ship and are launched into space. What are our chances?
Come here. This board shows a light for each ship that is en route in space. There, you see that one? That's a couple named Fort and Mary Ellen. They went out together last week, headed for the Deneb systems. As long as the light shows, they're all right. They haven't been destroyed by radiation or piled up on some asteroid or gotten into a time warp. We know from our years of launching couples here on Curbstone that 46% of them never make it.
And of those that make it?
We don't know. They have the equipment for survival, of course, but who knows what they'll meet on some strange planet.
And still they go out, huh?
Still they go out.
When do I take the examinations?
Well, you can start tomorrow if you like. I'd like to talk over old times with you right now, but I have to check the other two passengers you came up with.
Certainly.
Tween, would you come in, please? Tween assists me here. She, too, is waiting to find a partner for the trip.
Yes?
Katrine, this is Judson. Judson's an old friend. He was a student of mine many years ago.
Very happy to meet you.
Yes, I know you are.
Tween, tell the others to come in, please.
Yes, sir.
A remarkable girl.
Remarkable looking, at any rate.
Well, Tween will tell you where your quarters are. I hope we'll talk soon.
Well, I hope so. Oh, by the way,
yeah?
That light on the board, Fort and Mary Ellen?
What about it?
Well, it just went out.
I was happy to see Judson. My memories of our association were pleasant ones. As he left, the other two passengers came in. The man was young, dark-haired, and slick-looking. His name was Wald. The woman, well, she takes some describing. Her name was Flower. Her voice was like a cello, and her figure was a walking demand for the revival of the now extinct profession of Peeping Tom. Let me be honest, I didn't like either of them. That takes care of your documents.
How long will it take us to be certified?
Well, that depends. If you pass your test, it can happen in a week.
And suppose we don't pass our tests?
You might be here a year, 2 years. There's no limit. You can keep taking the test, or you can return to Earth.
Earth? Oh. Well, is there anything to do up here? I'm in excitement.
That depends on what you consider excitement.
Anything we haven't already tried. Isn't that right, Wald?
We decided to come up here, Mr.
Call me Karen.
Karen? How quaint.
Anyway, we decided to come up here because we were bored with the routine on Earth.
You're aware of the risk involved?
You mean we might not make it? Well, that's life, isn't it?
Well, for some. For others, it's death.
I don't like that kind of talk.
You'll attend an orientation session tomorrow. I'll have my assistant show you to your quarters. Tween?
Yes?
Come in, Tween. I want you to meet Flower.
How do you do?
And Wald.
Well, curbstone is exciting already.
Something different, darling?
Oh, shut up.
This is Tween. She'll show you where you live.
Oh, a pleasure. A distinct pleasure.
There was something decadent about Wald and Flower, something almost reptilian. I couldn't believe that these two would ever step into a ship and risk the trip to space. Of course, I could be wrong. Boredom drives people to risk many things. At the session the next day, I watched my three new arrivals. When it was over, I stood talking to Judson. Well, still want to go out?
Yes.
Picked out a companion yet?
Oh, yes.
Really? Well, you haven't met anybody yet.
I've met the person I'd like to go with.
Mind if I ask who?
Your assistant, Tween.
You don't disappoint me, Jed. I fell in love with her the first time I met her, too.
I haven't even talked to her yet, except to say hello and where's the commissary, but there's a quality about her like, well...
Like a cool breeze on a hot summer's day.
Well, you are smitten.
At my age, I can afford to be romantic.
Excuse me, am I interrupting?
Not at all. Judson, you know Flower.
Yes, we met on the ship coming to Curbstone.
I wondered if you were busy.
Me?
You.
Well, not really, no.
Good. Then you can take me down to the recreation room for some methyl caffeine.
Well, I don't use it.
That doesn't mean you can't take me.
Well, you're Mr. Wald,
oh,
I mean...
Wald and I are just very good friends. Besides, he's busy right now. He's being shown around the satellite by this... gentleman's assistant.
Tween?
That's her name. The peculiar one. Coming, Judson?
I guess so. You excuse us?
Certainly. When I saw Tween the next day, there were stars in her eyes. Good morning.
Good morning.
You're laughing.
Am I?
Your eyes are.
I'm happy.
Good.
I think it won't be long now.
Before what?
Before I'm certified.
Oh?
I've met someone who really likes me.
I see.
Can you guess?
No, who is it?
Well, you know the dark-haired young man who came in yesterday with your friend Judson?
Wald?
Mm-hmm. We went down to the ship together and he Well, he asked a lot of questions about it, and then we started to talk about us. He says he's wasted his whole life flitting from one diversion to another.
Really?
Now he says he's looking for something with some meaning.
You like him?
Well, he isn't afraid of me. He doesn't see anything wrong with my being different.
I thought he was with Flower.
Oh, he says he and Flower travel together because of habit. They're both bored and looking for something. Or someone.
Well, as long as it makes you happy.
He kissed me. Do you know that no man has ever kissed me like that?
You enjoyed it?
Oh, yes.
Did he say anything about going out into space with you?
He said he could think of no one he'd rather go with.
And when is he going to sign the certification?
Well, he felt we ought to get to know each other better. For a while, anyway. He's right, don't you think?
Yes, I think it would be better.
Karen.
Yes?
I love you very much.
Why did you say that?
Well, because it's true. I mean, oh, there's something so kind and understanding about you.
Don't let it fool you. Underneath, I'm the same as anybody else.
Oh, I don't believe it. Why, they picked you for this job because you have such compassion. You could never hate.
Could you?
I don't know. I never have, but... Well, now I don't know.
That's because you're in love. You can't love really unless you can hate.
Oh, I don't believe that.
Oh. I just invented it to sound as if I knew the answers. Come on, I'll buy you a drink to celebrate the big event. I watched her sip the drink, the tones of her skin coming and going with the pulse of her blood. I thought to myself, you're going to be hurt, twin. You're going to be terribly, terribly hurt. And I wondered if perhaps she didn't know it. Well, Twain, another couple out into space. Maria and Clint. Will you record it and have another ship brought up to the launcher? Twain.
What? Oh, sorry, I was thinking of something else.
Wald?
Sort of.
How long has it been now?
3 months.
Long time, huh?
Well, he wants to be sure.
And you? Are you sure?
Oh, yes.
Nothing to do but wait, then. I have to go over to the hull division. Will you take over?
Yes. Oh, sometime I, too, will be speeding through space, and I'll be a tiny light on this board.
Hello there. You mind if I come in?
Oh, not at all.
Where's Fatso?
Karen? Oh, he isn't that fat.
No, he's fat enough. Where is he?
He went over to the hull division.
Yeah, this is a nice layout.
Would you come to see me or the layout?
You know I came to see you. Matter of fact, I wanted to talk to you about something.
Well?
The party tonight at the rec center.
Well, what about it? We're going, aren't we?
I can't make it.
Was something wrong?
I'm meeting somebody else.
Oh.
Flower.
I see.
Oh, come on, now don't look so hurt. Flower and I have bummed around together for years.
Well, I thought she and Judson...
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
Well, they spend all their time together.
Oh, you don't know Flower. She likes to experience new things. When they get to be old, she tosses them away. All except me.
And you? Do you like to experience new things and toss them away?
Look, I'm sorry, Twain, but it's just the way I am.
Like Flower.
Like Flower. We're two of a kind.
Would you do me a favor?
Why not?
Make it a clean break. Don't try to see me again or tell me any more lies, even though I want to hear them.
Okay.
And thanks.
Thanks?
For these 3 months... Even though they've been make-believe. At least I've had them.
Well, I'll see you around.
Yeah. I'll see you around.
Hey.
Oh, Karen. Karen.
Oh, no. Just let him flow.
He doesn't care about me. He never has.
I know.
And he's going back to Flower.
I know. I saw him leaving.
What'll I do? He's the only one who ever wanted me.
No, not the only one. Now there are two of us. The question that kept going through my mind was, what next? How long was Wall going to hang around Curbstone before he decided to go back to Earth? I couldn't believe he'd have the guts to go out into space, but I had underestimated Flower.
Well, well, the prodigal returns.
Don't make funny remarks.
Tell me, darling, what brings you to my room at this late hour? Could it be that you miss me? Or has little Miss Tween given you the heave?
Shut up and give me a drink. And don't act so self-righteous. You've been having your fling with this Judson character.
My. Jealous, too.
Oh.
I thought you and I agreed a long time ago we'd never make any claims on each other.
That was a long time ago. Frankly, I'm getting bored with this satellite. Let's go back to Earth.
I'm bored with Earth.
Well, we'll go someplace else then.
I am going someplace else.
Where?
Out. Space.
Oh, come on now, don't be ridiculous.
Oh, I am not being ridiculous.
Do you know that only 46% arrive? And if you get there, heaven only knows what kind of monsters or poison atmospheres get you.
I know, but there's a certain thrill in the risking.
Oh, and when did you start feeling poetic?
Since I started talking to Judson.
Listen, Flower, don't try to trick me. I know you too well. You're 100% too selfish to risk your pretty skin for some poetic feeling.
Well, listen to me. You and I have been together for years. We're very much alike. Now, I'm telling you that I intend to go out. I want you to sign my certification and come with me.
You're mad.
No, no. I think maybe if we get away from everything out there, we'll find each other.
Oh.
We'll have a chance to love and be decent like ordinary human beings. Oh, Walt, don't you see? We've been destroying ourselves for years. We're getting older now. Please. Please try to see it. A clean start, a new life, huh? Well?
This fella Judson has really been filling your ear, hasn't he?
He's a kind person. He doesn't think I'm a... well, worthless.
You kill me, girl.
Walt, will you come with me?
No, no. If you want to wreck yourself, go ahead. And who, pray tell, thinks enough of a cheap character like you to sign her certification?
Judson.
What?
He said he would go out with me. And I intend to go.
I certified Judson and Flower that same evening. They were going to leave at midnight. I was working late. Come in. Well, Flower, I thought you and Judson...
We're not going. At least, I'm not.
Oh?
Judson decided he didn't want me along.
He did?
Here. He left this note for me. The story of my life. Nice girl, but who wants to marry anybody like that?
Let's see. I'm going alone. Don't try to stop me. It wouldn't work. I'd always look down on you, Judson. It doesn't sound like him.
Sounds like every man I've ever known. Except Wald. Wald doesn't judge me.
Except Wald? Where's Judson now?
Locked in the ship. He's leaving at midnight.
3 minutes. Listen, you wait here.
Where are you going?
To see if I can reach that ship before it's too late. My size and age shouldn't run, especially when he has a bad valve in his heart. But I covered the distance to the takeoff ramp like a track star. As I hit the edge of the ramp, I heard Tween's voice screaming at me from the control tower.
Karen, look out! You'll burn! Karen! Look out! Karen!
I reached the door just as the rockets were beginning to warm up inside the ship. There wasn't any way to get in except to blast. There's only one way to stop a ship from taking off once the combustion chambers are operating. You have to get the dampening rods into the chambers and stop the chain reaction. It took a lot of beef, but I've got a lot. I looked around the control room of the ship. Judson was strapped into the pilot's chair. The controls were preset for automatic takeoff. I went over to him. He was dead. His head cracked like an eggshell. Judd, I know you can't hear me, but I swear to you, I'll get the one who did this.
Really? Don't move. I have a gun on you.
Wald, you're a pig. You're a living human pig.
Thanks for the compliment.
To take the life of a man whose only act against you was that he wanted to help Flower?
I can't afford to lose Flower.
Don't you think you've lost her already?
Not at all. She thinks Judson is going out into space without her.
I knew he wasn't capable of writing a note like that.
It doesn't matter.
Just how do you expect to get away with this?
Quite easily. Judson isn't going out alone after all.
Meaning?
He's going to have a companion. You.
It won't work, Wald.
Once the ship is headed for the stars, there won't be a shred of evidence.
Okay. You've got it all figured out.
That's right. Now turn around.
You have the gun. All I've got is this! Stop it! Drop it! Fat men can move amazingly fast, Walt.
What are you going to do?
Do? Nothing much. I'm just going to certify you, Walt.
What?
For a flight into space. There are things you can do to a man if you know enough physiology. Pressures on the nerve system that can immobilize him for hours. I did them to Wald. Then I set the controls of the ship again and went out. I was breathing hard. It took me a long time to make it up the steps of the control tower where Tween was waiting.
I was so worried. I thought you'd be burned. And then when Wall went
I'm
in...
Okay. Yes, let me sit down a minute.
What happened?
Nothing much. I had to stop Judson from leaving alone, that's all.
But why?
Well, Wald decided to leave with him.
What?
That's right. He finally repented. He knew that if he stayed around, he'd just make you unhappy again. So he asked me to stop Judson until he could join him.
You mean he did...
Any second now. There go the engines.
Oh, he had a spark of decency in him after all. I knew it.
Yes. In a way, he's a sort of hero.
The ship is trembling now. There they go.
Maybe she knew, maybe not. Anyway, she had loved a man, and now she could love another. She came over to me and leaned over and kissed my mouth. Her lips were cool. Then I knew that I could live with the viciousness of what I had done. When you're old and fat as I am, the kiss of a young girl can make you human again. They call me Karen. They forget what it feels like to be denied two worlds instead of one. And they forget something else, too. Karen was more than a boat pilot. He was an executioner.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features a story by Theodore Sturgeon, The Other Man, which tells of the hardest decision a man could face, to do his job well and thereby aid his bitterest enemy. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Stars Are the Sticks, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by H.L. Gold and adapted for radio by Ernest Kinoy. Featured in the cast were Craig McDonald, Patsy O'Shea, Dick Hamilton, Charlotte Manson, and Bob Hastings. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Bob Maurer and is an NBC Radio Network production.
The music of Freddie Martin, live weekday morning starting Monday on NBC Radio.
And now it's time for Groucho.
And now, will wonders never cease, beautiful Gloria Haven and talented Groucho Marx will blend their voices. I hope you like it. You better like it. A blend is the best you can get nowadays. Anyway, here's the trolley song.
With my high starch collar and my high top shoes and my hair piled high upon my head, I went to lose a jolly hour on the trolley and lost my heart instead.
With my light brown derby and my bright green tie, I was quite the handsomest of men. I started to yen, so I counted to 10, then I counted to 10 again.
Clang, clang, clang went the trolley. Ding, ding, ding went the bell. Zing, zing, zing went my heartstrings. For the moment I saw him, I fell.
Pardon me, sir. Haven't I seen you someplace before?
I don't think so. I've never been any place before. I spent all my time in this trolley.
All your time?
I was born here. I'll never forget that day. My mother was on her way to the hospital when all of a sudden the car stopped.
For what?
A red light and me. It's been a grand life in this car, but I'm hoping someday to get a transfer. I'm dying to see what the sunset bus looks like.
You're wonderful.
You're observant, and you're pretty, too. I like the way you got your hair piled high upon your head. Ever think of combing it?
Well, it isn't all my hair. I've got some rats.
You've got some rats what? Never mind. I don't love you for your high hair. I don't love you for your high starch collar. And I don't love you for your high shoes. Say, if you get any high, you'll have a hangover in the morning. And why should I hang around a girl who drinks? So long.
Stop, 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 went my heartstrings. As he started to leave, I took hold of his sleeve with my hand. And as though it were planned, he stayed on with me, and it was grand just to stand with his hand holding mine.
Brings us to the end of another mail call, and a good thing, too, because a man from the Motion Picture Academy has just come in. He wants the Oscars back. So until next time, this is Groucho Marx saying good luck from all of us to all of you.
Now let's go to the college town of Ivy, USA, the Halls of Ivy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
I was curious. I tasted it. Now I know why Schlitz is the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
If you like good beer, you'll find it pays to be curious and learn about Schlitz for yourself. And now, the Halls of Ivy.
We love the Halls of Ivy that surround us. us here today, and we will not forget, though we be far, far away.
Welcome again to Ivy, the College of Ivy and the town of Ivy, USA. Dr. William Todd Hunter Hall, president of Ivy College, has all the troubles common to college presidents. They consist mostly of fiscal matters, financial affairs, and money. As he's often been heard to say, a man in his position must be one part babysitter, one part mediator, and 98 parts panhandler. But Dr. Hall has at least one advantage over his scholastic opposite number. He has a wife named Victoria, formerly a glittering ornament of the English musical comedy theater, and now the epitome of what a tired man should come home to.
Ah, what a lovely room this is. Not an old grad in sight. Vicky, are you here?
Yes, dear. Oh, you look tired, Toddy. Had a rough day?
Oh, not too awfully bad. I have pledges of $151,000 toward the new gymnasium.
Well, that's wonderful. $150,000 seems like a great deal of money.
Yes, yes, it does. Until you remember that these are pledges, not cash.
I suppose there is a difference.
There is indeed. The same difference that exists between the sudden slight illness of a wealthy uncle and the reading of the will. Is Penny ready with the tea?
Right here, sir, and some of your favorite biscuits, too.
Thank you, Penny.
Penny?
Yes, Mum?
How many times must I tell you cookies, not biscuits? We are now in the United States of America, and we speak Mr. Truman's English, not the King's.
Yes, Mum. I'll keep trying, Mum. Lifts is elevators, trams is streetcars, lorries is trucks, and a duke is a prize fighter's fist. Cookies, she says.
Oh, stop grizzling, Penny. Here you are, William.
Thank you. I'm glad you brought Penny over here with you, Victoria. The way she makes tea should cement British-American relations for years to come.
Yes.
Yes, and the way she makes coffee would dissolve the cement overnight. Has anything happened today?
Well, let me think. There was a young man named Gray who wanted to see you. He came 3-4 times. He seemed rather emotionally upset.
Emotional upsets are not infrequent among college-age young men, Vicky. They are psychic growing pains.
Ah, that's probably Mr. Gray. You'd better take care of his growing pains and call me when he's cured. I'll be in the kitchen. Tonight I'm making the coffee myself.
A gentleman to see you, Dr. Hall. Mr. Malott.
Mr. Malott? Malott? Well, he couldn't be the... Ask him in, Penny.
Right in here, sir.
Hello?
How do you do? Penny, please take the things away, will you? Unless I can offer you a cup, sir.
No, thank you. Dr. Hall, I'm Mike Malott.
Yes, I've seen your picture in the paper. What did you wish to see me about?
Well, Dr. Grapevine says you're out after some dough for a new gym. Is that right?
The grapes on your vine are a little overripe, Mr. Malott. It's rather common knowledge. What about it?
I want to give you some.
May I ask you a question, Mr. Malott?
Sure. But I warn you, Doc, I've been questioned by experts under brighter lights than you got in here. Go ahead.
What business are you in?
Well, that's a fair question. I got a string of dry cleaning joints. That's on top. On the bottom, I make book.
Bookmaking is not a legal operation, Mr. Malott.
Illegal or illegal, Doc, depends on locations. Horse booking is against the law in this country. In England, it's legal.
Well, then I suggest you make your donation to Oxford. That's in England.
I ain't got a kid in Oxford.
You have a kid attending Ivy College?
Yeah, son.
I didn't know that.
Well, not many people do, Doc, and I want to keep it off the record. He's a good boy. I want to see him get the breaks that I didn't get when I was a kid. In a cold water flat, laying on a cheap mattress with a piece of billiard cue, waiting for the next rat to come out of the plaster.
Mr. Malott, I fully sympathize with your intention of giving your son the advantages you lacked.
I'm not asking for sympathy, Doc. I'm asking for a square deal for the kid, that's all.
Ivy College does not sell square deals, Mr. Malott. We have here the The sons and daughters of rich men, poor men, beggar men, thieves, doctors, lawyers, and merchants of almost everything. I doubt if anyone here expects more of a square deal than he is entitled to through hard work, decency, and a certain civilizing contact with his fellows.
How do they get this contact?
I should think that would be obvious. In classes, fraternities, sports, and...
Yeah, but Eddie ain't getting it.
Why isn't he?
I don't know. He's got a nice personality, but no nice friends, only stooges. I want to get him into a fraternity, and don't tell me that ain't for sale.
I do tell you that.
Now, wait a minute. If this school gets, say, $250,000 toward a new gymnasium, you mean nobody can pull hard enough to get a boy into a fraternity?
Mr. Malott, I'm afraid your somewhat violent training has distorted your social viewpoint.
Huh? Break that down.
I shall. You, Mr. Malott, have had too much experience with special privilege. You've spent too many years purchasing crooked policemen, aldermen, judges. You've made yourself a power in the land through money, through fear. You are a totalitarian. If your son wishes to... Does he, by the way, know that you are here in his behalf?
If he knew it, he'd slug me.
Good.
What?
Well, I say good because now I'm interested in Eddie. Eddie who, by the way? I gather he is not using your name.
Oh, Gray. Eddie Gray.
Well, I'll talk to your son, Mr. Malott, but I'm afraid I must refuse your donation to our gymnasium fund.
You mean my money ain't good enough, huh?
Oh, money has no status of its own. It's merely a medium of exchange. The only question that arises is, what would we be expected to exchange for it? In this case, special privileges to one Eddie Gray. However, I am impressed by any boy who has the integrity to poke his father in the nose for attempting to buy him into the good graces of his fellows.
You don't accept the donation, huh?
And not yours, Mr. Malott. Well, that's my personal reaction. I may be overruled.
Uh-huh. Well, okay. Wellman thought you might take that attitude.
Wellman?
Yeah.
You mean Mr. Clarence Wellman of our governing board?
Mm-hmm. He really wants this gymnasium, you know? Well, thanks for the conversation. You don't have to go to the door with me. I won't steal anything on the way out.
The only thing I have which you might want can neither be stolen nor sold, Mr. Malott. Good day.
I'll be seeing you.
$250,000. Hall, I'm afraid your vaunted integrity will someday get you a fine position running a filling station.
Would I be too inquisitive, Toddy, if I asked what Mr. Malott wanted?
Oh, so you recognized him, eh, Vicky?
I recognize his voice. I've heard him in the courtroom, in newsreels. I never forget a voice. He's, arrogant, isn't he?
He has the arrogance of purchasing power. A man who has lifted himself by his own bootleg, if I may perpetrate a mild pun. Vicky.
Yes, dear.
See if you can get a student named Eddie Gray to come over and see me, will you?
Certainly. Eddie Gray? Well, that's the boy who's been trying to see you all day.
Yes, he's Mike Malott's son.
No.
I'm anxious to talk to him. His father is a sterling character, devaluated. I want to see how far the devaluation has gone.
I was curious. I tasted it. Now I know why Schlitz is the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
There's a story behind those words, a pleasant story that may suggest something equally pleasant to you. So before we return to the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman, here's a curious artist to tell us about the masterpiece he discovered aboard a steamer.
I'm a portrait painter. And other people's faces are my fortune. So it isn't surprising that studying faces has become almost second nature with me. Just last month, for instance, during my trip to Bermuda, I was in the lounge pretending to read a magazine, but actually watching a man drink beer. As the beer passed his lips, you could see his expression, change from pleasant anticipation to complete satisfaction. But the more I watched, the more distracted I became. Instead of just observing the man's expression, I found myself wondering what it would be like to taste a beer that could give so much satisfaction. I took the trouble to look at the label on the bottle. The man was drinking Schlitz. I'd heard about Schlitz, of course, but I'd never tasted it. So I called the waiter and ordered a bottle. I discovered that Schlitz was more than a work of art. It was a masterpiece. Here was a beer so fine and so distinctive that the complete picture of its goodness could only be painted by tasting it. As I sat there drinking my glass of Schlitz and enjoying every drop, I happened to glance into the mirror. There was that same look of satisfaction I'd seen before. Only this time, I was wearing it. As an artist, I'd doff my beret, if I had one, to the beer that can command such a reaction. No wonder they call Schlitz the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
That surround us here today.
And now back to Ivy, where Mrs. Hall is asking a question.
Would you prefer to be left alone with the boy, William, when he gets here?
On the contrary, Vicky, I wish you'd stay. After all, one of the reasons I married you was so that I could utilize your understanding for young people. Or did you think it was just because you were beautiful, charming, and I loved you very much?
Well, I really don't think you had very much to say about it, Tony. The minute we met, I decided to marry you. And with typical British tenacity, I followed through. Any regrets?
Oh, no. I've liked it from the first. And not only for the usual reasons, love and affection and admiration and all that, but historically, our marriage has perspective.
It has, dear?
Yes, England has always been married to America. Oh, they may bicker a bit, criticize each other's manners, argue over the paycheck, but let one of them hear a burglar in the middle of the night and they start helping each other look through the bureau drawers for the family revolver. Which, for some reason, they never keep loaded. Yes, I always think that... was that the doorbell?
Yes, it must be Mr. Gray. And you do want me to stay?
Oh, please. You can be maternal while I am in loco parentis.
Well, whatever that is, dear, I'm sure you'll do it very successfully. Mr. Gray... Yes, Penny?
A young gentleman to see Dr. Orr, Mum.
Oh, bring him right in, Penny.
Yes, sir. Just step in here, please, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mrs. Hall.
How do you do?
Hello, Doctor. I'm Edward Gray.
I'm sorry I was out when you called before, Gray. Won't you sit down?
Thank you, sir.
Well, I think we've met before, Mr. Gray. You were kind enough to carry some books out to my car at the bookshop last week.
Oh, that was all right. I was just in there killing a couple hours anyway, buying some magic stuff.
Magic stuff?
Parlor magic, Doctor. It's kind of a hobby. Oh. Look, I'll show you. Here's a deck of cards. Take one. Any one.
Very well. This one.
Okay. Now put it back in the deck. You remember the card?
Yes, it was the...
No, don't tell, William. Go ahead, Mr. Gray.
Okay. Now I shuffle the deck, fire a pistol, which I just happen to have in my left hand. And if you'll look up, Doctor, I believe that's the card you selected fastened to the ceiling with a thumbtack.
Well. That's, very interesting. How did you do that?
Oh, William, please. One never asks a magician to reveal a trick.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was very well done, Gray.
Thank you, sir. I have a lot of time to practice. I don't belong to any of the organizations around here, so... Well, that's why I wanted to see you.
Why, what do you mean?
I think maybe I ought to leave Ivy.
Well, it seems a little drastic, Gray. Have you discussed this with your faculty advisor?
No, sir. My faculty advisor is Professor Bolton, and he's a droop. I mean...
Oh, don't apologize, Mr. Gray. I think he's a bit of a droop myself.
Gee, you do?
Victoria, just maternal. Exactly. Why are you unhappy here, Gray? You've been getting good marks.
Oh, I don't have any trouble with studies, Doctor, but the guys... I mean, the men and girls I'd like to go around with... Well, I seem to attract just the free ride kids, if you know what I mean.
May I make a suggestion, Eddie? if I may call you Eddie.
Oh, sure, Mrs. Hall.
Get rid of that big, shiny convertible. Send it home. Get a broken-down Jalosky.
A jalopy is the word, my dear. Its origin is obscure, although etymologists believe there is some slight connection with the Mexican word jalop, which is a purgative tuberous... Excuse me, I didn't mean to be pedantic. You were saying...
Well, I was telling Mr. Gray to get rid of that big flashy car. Also, Eddie, your clothes are too good. Too obviously expensive. How do you expect to be one of the gang when you ride around looking like a Maharaja?
I think Mrs. Hall has a definite point there, Gray. A lot of Ivy students are working their way through school. How do you think you look to them in your $200 suits and your $5,000 car? Why, good heavens, I resent you myself.
Gosh, I never thought of it like that. I've always had that stuff, and I wasn't trying to throw it around.
Eddie, will you do something for me?
I don't think there's anybody in the school that wouldn't do anything for you, Mrs. Hall.
Oh, thank you. The Junior Follies is just 6 weeks away. And we need you.
Me? You need me? Oh, gee, what for?
Well, we're rather desperately in need of a good act in one.
In one what?
In one. It means in front of the curtain, while they change the scenes. And if you will do a magic act for 10 or 12 minutes, you'll be one of the most popular men in the school.
But hey, I'm not good enough for that.
Well,
yet,
you have 6 weeks to brush up, Gray.
Yeah, you said yourself you don't know what to do with your spare time.
Well, I... Oh, but look, I'll just have to have something to say, won't I? I can't just stand up there and throw rabbits around.
Well, can you meet me in the auditorium at, say, 3 tomorrow? Have you a class then?
Oh, sure, but for this, I'll cut it. How about my pattern?
The word is pronounced Pater, my boy, and I think he'll be very pleased when he hears that
No, William, no.
What, dear, what?
He said Pater, not Pater. Pater means a monologue.
Oh.
All good magicians have a line of patter, Eddie. And I can write you one this very evening that can't possibly fail.
Oh, gee.
Please watch me closely, and you will notice that as I perform this feat, my hands never leave my arms. You know the sort of thing. Tomorrow, then.
Oh, it's a deal, Mrs. Hall. Thanks a lot, Doctor. This has been wonderful.
Yes, I found it rather interesting myself. Let me know how you get along, Eddie. Good day.
Bye, sir.
Bye. Goodbye.
Vicky, if you pull this boy out of his sensitive isolation and make him one of the crowd, it'll be a magic act of which you may well be proud.
Oh, nonsense, dear. He's really a nice boy. A lot of pride. He'll be all right. And if he makes a fraternity, then maybe you can accept his father's donation to the gymnasium.
Oh, I think not, Vicky. I don't want to seem a stuffy moralist.
I get it. Dr. Hall's residence. Who? Oh, yes, Mr. Merriweather. Yes. Of course, I'll tell him. Yes, he'll be here. No, not at all. Goodbye.
Mr. Merriweather.
Yes. He and Mr. Wellman have something they want to discuss with you. 3 guesses, dear.
This is a certainty. Mr. Merriweather and Mr. Wellman have been asked, or have volunteered, to make me change my mind by coercion, persuasion, blackmail, or blunt instrument.
And can you, offhand, think of a blunter instrument than Mr. Wellman?
Oh, dear, no. Nor a duller one.
Oh, I hope to goodness they're not going to stay long. Dinner tonight is specially for you. Lentil soup.
Ah, lentil soup. With little bits of sausage swimming about in it. Wishing they were being eaten at Luchow's instead of Hall's, eh? You remember Luchow's on 14th Street, Vicky?
Of course I do, Toddy. You took me there the night I landed in New York. Lentil soup, Wiener schnitzel, strawberry pancakes. And I was the slim young actress with the new wardrobe who was about to open and give them tears.
Personally, by the time we'd walked all the way to Central Park, I was hungry again. Someday, Vicky, I shall endow the city of New York with a special Central Park bench, the Victoria Cromwell Memorial Bench for the exclusive use of lovers.
And you can put a little brass plate on it that says, if you sit here and it gently rains and you stay anyway, you have the blessings of William and Victoria. Better put your hat on, Toddy. It's raining.
Oh, it isn't raining very hard. Feels rather good. Refreshing. But I don't want you to catch cold.
Oh, I won't, dear. I've walked miles in fog worse than this.
You won't miss London and England too much, will you, Vicky?
If I were still Victoria Cromwell, I'd probably miss it terribly. But as Mrs. William Todd Hunter Hall, geography doesn't seem very important. Who means more to me than where?
Let me put my coat over your shoulders a little more. There. And your hands are getting wet.
I know. But if I put my gloves on, I can't look at my ring.
I'm afraid it's a very little ring.
Darling, it's the biggest thing that ever happened. I love it. And I love you. And I... May I borrow your handkerchief? Thank you.
Oh, we'd better go. Your cheeks are getting wet.
Not from the rain, Toddy. I always weep when I'm happy. I think you should know it now, because I expect to be doing a lot of it.
I hope you'll never have to weep for any other reason, Vicky. Where your tears are concerned, I'm all for private ownership of water power. Oh, my dear, you're so...
Well, well, now, what's all this?
Oh, hello, officer. It's a lovely evening, isn't it?
No, it isn't. It's raining.
Oh.
Why don't you go home? I'm paid to stay out in it, but you're not.
I'm being amply compensated, officer, so don't worry about us. My wife and I like the rain.
Oh, your wife? I thought you were sweethearts. Well, guess I don't have to worry about you two carving your initials on the bench. Good night to you.
Good night, officer. Oh, cynical fellow. Doesn't think husbands and wives can be sweethearts. I think we should teach him a lesson.
How, Toddy?
Have you a jackknife? I'm going to carve two hearts entwined on this bench. WTH loves VC.
Toddy!
Oh, what's a little thunder? It isn't raining hard enough to...
But, Toddy, it isn't thunder. Someone's knocking.
Well, let them knock. Our first night in New York and...
William, dear, and... there's somebody at the door.
At the door? What door? Central Park hasn't any... Oh, the door! Our door! Yes. Well, maybe it's a good thing. I might have carved our initials on the piano.
Toddy. Toddy, you are an incurable daydreamer.
Yes, I'm afraid I am, Victoria. Incurable and incredibly lucky.
Lucky? Why?
Because, my darling, few daydreamers can return to an actuality one half as pleasant as mine.
Mr. Merriweather and Mr. Wellman to see you, Doctor.
Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Merriweather.
Oh, Mr. Wellman. Merriweather.
Please sit down, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mrs. Hall. I won't keep you but a few minutes, Doctor. You probably know what we're calling about.
Yes, I think I do.
It's about an offer of $250,000 toward our new gymnasium, Dr. Hall. Am I correct in believing that you refuse to accept it?
Quite correct, Mr. Wellman.
Personally, Doctor, I don't think you'd turn down a sum of money like that without some very good reason. Clarence here and some of the other board members are pretty upset about it. Upset, did I say? Gad, sir, their ulcers were jumping like popcorn.
The Board of Governors had a right to be upset, Merriweather. As badly as this college needs $250,000, it's ridiculous.
Yes, we know, Clarence. It's a lot of money, but money isn't everything. It's almost everything, I'll admit, but let's give Dr. Hall a chance to explain. How about it, Doctor?
Oh, it's very simple, Mr. Merriweather, to me, at least.
Well, to me, it's a downright...
Be quiet, Clarence, you witch burner. Yes, Doctor?
Gentlemen, when an institution... dedicated to shaping the characters of future citizens, accepts money from a dubious source, it must also be prepared to accept the accusation of undue influence.
I couldn't agree with you more, Doctor.
And I couldn't disagree more, Merriweather. The source of this donation is not important when you consider the benefits of a new gymnasium in this college.
Excuse me, Mr. Wellman.
Mrs. Hall.
Mr. Malott warned my husband that you wouldn't care for his attitude.
He was right, I don't.
Victoria, dear.
And I'm sure he had no intention of disturbing any friendly relations that you might have with Mr. Malott.
What friendly relations? Is that hoodlum a pal of yours, Clarence?
Certainly not. Don't be an idiot, Merriweather. I know the man only in a business way.
Business? What business would you have with Malott?
Oh, it was a long time ago and not important. I had stock in some cleaning establishments, and Malott used his influence to... that is, we had a little labor trouble.
Is this general knowledge, Mr. Wellman?
No, I don't think so. I hope not. But the point is, Dr.
The point is, Clarence, that you're a dead duck. What a juicy item for the papers. College official uses influence to take donation from ex-gangster friend.
Good gracious, man. You don't think...
They'd hang you from the chapel steeple and you know it.
That's bad money, Mr. Wellman. We can't take it. I'm sorry if you disagree.
He doesn't disagree. Neither will anyone else on the board when I explain it to him. You're right again, Doctor. I, Don't know why we can't seem to learn that. Come on, Clarence.
Very well. About a quarter of a million
dollars. It's a lot of lettuce, but there's too much oil in the dressing. Good night, Doctor.
Good night.
Good night, Mrs. Hall.
Good night.
Good night.
I think you handled that very well, William.
It was Meriwether who handled it, my dear. Meriwether and you.
I?
My dear girl, now don't look so innocent. That sympathetic remark of yours about not wishing to disturb the tender relationship between Wellman and Malott, that was blackmail. Sheer, downright, beautiful blackmail. And yes, Penny?
Dinner is served, sir, and will you be in this evening?
Yes, Penny.
No, Penny.
What, dear?
We're going for a walk. We always go for a walk after lentil soup in the park. Now, let me think. Where did I put my jackknife?
I was curious. I tasted it. Now I know why Schlitz is the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
And here again are Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
My dear, there are times when I think that you should be president of Ivy College.
Why on earth should you think that?
Well, there's a popular belief that the female of the species is devious, indirect, and entirely intuitive. Personally, I find the methods of your sex appallingly straightforward. I once wrote a two-line verse on the subject.
Well, tell.
I called it Advice on Practical Plumbing, but it contains a rather atrocious pun. It went something like this. For that difficult task, just go to your bench and select for the job an adjustable wench.
I think that's very amusing, dear. And if you'll excuse me, I'll go and adjust myself for dinner.
Certainly, darling. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
We'll be seeing you next week at this time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. The other players were Herbert Butterfield, Willard Waterman, William Conrad, Gil Stratton Jr., Ted Osborne, and Gloria Gordon. Tonight's script was written by Don Quinn and Walter Brown Newman. Our music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. The Halls of Ivy was created by Don Quinn, directed by Nat Wolf, and presented by the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Ken Carpenter speaking.
Oh, we love the halls of ivy that surround us here today, and we will not forget, though we be far, far.
Next, hear We the People over most of these same NBC stations.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.